From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the first day of March 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Nick Paulson will join us to discuss an article he's written and co-authored about the Ukraine-Russia issue and the impact it may have on American agriculture and global trade across the planet. And then we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That with Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. And along the way, I'll remind you to check out willag.org or to dial 217-333-7300 to purchase your tickets for next Tuesday's Spring Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $7.39¾. That was up 42¼ cents. The May at $7.25¾, 35 higher in December futures. Your new crop up 17½, a settlement price at $6.24¾. March soybeans, $17.05½, 61¼ higher. The May at $16.90, up 53¼. And November beans, $14.77, up 41¼. Bean meal in the March, $8.80 higher at $4.63.70, and the bean oil at $3.91 higher, $76.80, the settled price for the March contract. Wheat futures, soft red, $10.75¾, 73¾ higher, and the hard red at $10.12, up 57¾ cents for the afternoon. On this Tuesday, live cattle at $140.52½, their settled price in the April, down 90 cents. Feeders were off $2.20 at $159.80, and the lean hogs at $106.20, up $2.70. Crude oil, $103.03 a barrel, up $7.31. Diesel fuel or heating oil up 2½ cents, or rather 21⅓ cents at $3.14½. And the wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB at $3.08⅛ per gallon, up 15Ⅷ cents. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now about 590 points lower, around 33,240 points for the day. We're joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. 1 week from today, Wayne, we will not be doing this program. However, we will be in front of an audience at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. And man, am I looking forward to that.
It's going to be a lot of fun, Todd. You know, how many years of fun have we had over there? 30-some years. And it's going to be fun to get back out, you know, over this COVID thing and just get back and see all those smiling faces. And boy, are we going to have some stuff to talk about this year with the prices we got. It's just going to be more fun you can imagine.
Just in an inordinate number of fundamentals to deal with. You have inflation, the Ukraine-Russia issue, drought in the Western Corn Belt as it relates to wheat, drought in Brazil and Argentina, maybe some relief there, and the marketplace continues to move higher. What's happening that you made most note of this week so far in Chicago?
Well, you know, we continue to watch what we watched before the war started. You know, we are seeing that there's a backlog of boats down in Brazil, and we're seeing maybe a little cancellation of some beans out of Brazil and actually transferring those. We saw some sales today that might be China coming up and moving a few boats instead of sitting there gaining demurrage. They are seeing a little better weather down there. Would actually maybe put a little pressure on the beans had we not had everything else going on. But, you know, all in all, it's all about talking about what's happening in Russia and Ukraine right now. The stoppage of grain exports out of Ukraine was confirmed on Monday. All ports will be closed until the end of the invasion. You know, they've mined the ports there. So we're looking at a lot of area. You know, Ukraine accounts for 16% of the world corn and 12% of the world wheat exports. You know, and Russia covers 17% of that trade also. And you put that together, and the Ukraine and Russia are the largest wheat exporter. And we've just shut off the wheat exporting out of that area just because nobody's insurance for freight goes in there.
And so those wheat exports are shut off. That will cause some chaos within the global marketplace. Wheat, of course, has been leading the market higher. Are there any indications of how high might be for wheat?
Oh, that's, you know, there's going to come some points, and depending on what stocks people have and whatever. You know, the one good thing about it is Ukraine has a lot of their wheat in the ground. They planted a lot already, and it is rated pretty good. But the fact of the matter is we've still got to get ports open for them to do that. And that's sort of the big thing. You know, we're looking at it's going to be offline for at least 30 days or longer if the war were ended tomorrow, because they've mined their port, so the Russian warships just couldn't come in there and attack from that way. And to demine that is going to take at least 30 days, if not longer. And that'll be when we end the war and have an agreement over there as to what's going on. But a lot of things are screwed up because of the way that the sanctions have been put on them and what's going on in the world. So that, you know, is a big deal. You know, as we look, it's just a lot of stuff in that area of the world and a lot of things we don't do. One good thing we can talk about is we do have our insurance prices now, $5.90 for corn and $14.33 for beans, some awfully big numbers. And give your insurance agent a couple days until they get the computers up and you can start checking and seeing what sort of insurance rates you're going to have this year.
Now, do we know what the volatility number was off of that? I'd forgotten to check.
No, we don't. That's where the insurance companies and why they just, everybody thinks we can add this in and do whatever, and they don't have that volatility factor in their programs yet for us to just start punching up and seeing what we have. And unfortunately, I believe, as you were reminding us last week when you talked to Gary Schnitke, that that volatility number was higher than usual, and that volatility number is going to probably raise your insurance costs
by about $3 an acre on soybeans, maybe. Just from the beginning of the week to the end of the week would be my guess. So,
when have we seen where the very last day we can raise the guarantee a penny? Generally, in the last week, you don't move enough to hardly change what that number is going to be. And that got wild here this last week. But, you know, a lot of stuff. We are looking at a little better rains to help Paraná and two-thirds of Argentina in the next 10 days, Todd. And that is, you know, a little bit. We might see a few more corn bushels come on later when they reassess. I think next Friday that CONAB is going to do a reassessment of their crops and take a look and see how they are and how they, if any of the rains have helped them up at this point, or whether they'll deduct more. But we've got a lot of discrepancy between what CONAB's projecting for South America and what the USDA still has on their books.
Yeah, USDA is what, at 134, CONAB's at 125, is that correct? CONAB's at 125, but I don't quite recall what.
Yeah, CGO is at 119.5, and the USDA is at 134, and you were right about CONAB, that's where they were at. Corn, CGO is at 106, and we're at 114, so there's quite a discrepancy there. But remember, they're in the middle of planting their Safrina corn, and that's their bigger corn crop. So if we get some weather to straighten out, why those numbers, the corn number can come back quite a bit, but the bean number is going to be below and help us maybe pick up some of this bean export business a little later in the year.
Hey, look forward to seeing you next week.
Lots of fun to happen.
Indeed. That is Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and will join us, I hope you will too, at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, a week from today on Tuesday. You can buy those tickets online. They're just $25 at 217-333-7300 or willag.org. All the details and a way to register is there as well. That's frankly the easiest way to do it. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Nick Paulson, agricultural economist in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences on the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign. He's co-authored an article on the FarmDoc Daily website that takes a closer look at the exports and the role that both Ukraine and Russia play in the commodity markets across the planet. Thank you, Nick, for taking time with us today. Where is it that most of the exports from Ukraine and Russia go at this point, and what commodities might they be?
So Ukraine and Russia in the Black Sea region, that part of the world in general, is a major contributor in terms of world exports for a couple of crops. Wheat is probably the one that Ukraine specifically and Russia as well is known for. And so just, you know, looking at the numbers, you know, about pushing 30% of total wheat exports come from just those two countries. They've also become a pretty significant player in world corn exports. So the Ukraine there would play the larger role with about 15% of world corn exports. You know, the United States still is kind of the dominant player from both the production side and the export side for corn. But Ukraine is an area where we've seen growth in production, and then more so on the export side for corn. A few of the other commodities we looked at in the article yesterday were barley. So Ukraine and Russia are both pretty major barley exporters, account for over 30% of total barley exports. And then we also looked at soybeans, not because Ukraine and or Russia are major players in soybeans, but they do happen to be the top producers and exporters for sunflowers and sunflower oil. So there's a link there in terms of the world vegetable oil market to soybeans. And in terms of where most of ag exports go from the Ukraine to Russia, you know, they would be supplying the markets you'd probably guess, the ones that are closer in proximity to that part of the world. So a lot of those are supplying the Chinese market, European countries in Africa, parts of the Middle East. And so there is, you know, some competition, if you want to look at it that way, in terms of where Ukraine and Russia send some of their ag exports relative to where, you know, the U.S. Might send some of their exports. But importantly, I think it's, you know, what the conflict in Ukraine creates is a lot of market volatility and the potential for the need for some trade diversion. And so, you know, places like the U.S., South America, other exporters, net ag exporters will need to potentially fill the needs of other net importers that might typically source from the Ukraine and Russia, but, you know, disruptions that the conflict could introduce there. And what that means is that it will just drive up costs, so some bullish effects on the commodity side. But then we also touched on in the article some of the negatives that will be in place, just general inflationary pressures, continued pressure on energy prices, because that's another major, natural gas specifically is another major export of the Black Sea region, and how that might impact things like fertilizer prices or just energy prices directly. And then potash is another specific fertilizer product that comes out of that area. Russia and Ukraine are large potash exporters. And so that could, you know, whether that impacts the 2022 crop year based on when potash is typically applied, but definitely a concern potentially for this year and looking ahead to future crop years.
And the concern there is about sanctions?
A couple aspects of this. From Ukrainian production, obviously they're northern hemisphere just like we are, and so we're getting into their planting season just like we're getting into our planting season here. So there could be a direct disruption of spring planting in Ukraine. On the Russian side, it's sanctions that are being pretty broadly imposed by the international community. The big financial market sanctions that came over the weekend will seriously disrupt, you know, Russia's ability to just be part of international finance in general, which will obviously impact, you know, not just ag exports, but all international transactions that Russia is involved with.
The Office of the U.S. Trade Representative today said that it appears that China may be working with USTR to implement better trading relations between the two nations. Would that be part and parcel of what's happening in Ukraine, do you think?
There could be a link. It would view, again, from a risk volatility standpoint, the reliance on that part of the world for a good chunk of your importing needs for a country like China. US may be viewed as more desirable at this point just because of relative stability here versus the Ukraine and Russia region right now. So could be contributing, but hopefully that's just also part of ongoing negotiations between the US and China to kind of get back and build on trade relationships we'd had prior to the trade war.
So input prices in the United States, inflation could be an issue for farmers here, maybe this year, maybe in 2023. What's the gain potentially on the world market if Ukraine, maybe parts of Russia, are unable to supply grains?
Well, again, on the grain supply side, I think that's could be viewed as a relatively positive impact for other net exporters like the U.S. So some definitely volatility and probably some net bullish effects on commodity prices, which again is a positive for U.S. farmers. But on the input side, those gains could be partially, completely, more than offset by increased input costs. Again, I think the most direct links to what we're what we could see the effects being coming out of Ukraine or Russia would be on the energy market side and how that plays into fertilizers. Again, whether that's going to impact the current 2022 planting season for farmers, my guess is maybe those impacts won't play out over the next month in terms of nitrogen fertilizers, other inputs that need to go on for the 2022 crop. But definitely looking ahead to the fall, which would be a period where we might see more, lack of availability, volatility in prices associated with a product like potash. Typically, apply a lot of that in the fall. That could be something that we could see play out later this year, but would be affecting more the 2023 crop year.
And finally, I'm looking forward to having you and Jonathan Kappas at the Spring Outlook at the Beef House next week on Tuesday, just 1 week away. You'll be talking about farm policy and looking, I think, towards 2023. Have the two of you talked about what discussion points might be up for next week?
So we'll probably touch a little bit on the ARC PLC decision. That farmers are kind of currently in that decision window for the 2022 year. Although, given where market prices are at, that's not a decision to invest a ton of emotional effort into. Maybe not wanting to lose a lot of sleep over this year. We'll probably touch on that. I think the general theme right now. Don't know exactly what's coming out of USDA. What will exactly be included in the Farm Bill, but. All roads seem to kind of point towards buzzwords like climate smart agriculture, emissions sequestration opportunities in agriculture, and incorporating those environmental ecosystem benefit issues into some of the farm programs, or directly creating new programs that would address some of those environmental issues. Looking forward for farm policy, so I think there's general agreement that's probably the biggest issue and most likely direction we'll see policy move in the next farm bill. Details on exactly what that'll look like, though, are still a lot of speculation associated with that.
We'll look forward to hearing from you next week. Thank you, and I appreciate you being with me today.
Thanks, Todd.
Nick Paulson is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. He and Jonathan Kappas will join us next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana for our Will Ag Farm Doc Spring Outlook. Most of the Farm Doc team will be there. Nick and Jonathan will talk about farm policy, and Gary Schnitke will be there to discuss crop insurance. We'll talk about the price of commodities with Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin, and Bruce Sherrick will take up the value of farmland. Plus, we'll have Eric Snodgrass on hand to look at the weather forecast, and of course, 10 of our regular on-air analysts to talk about the marketplace. We encourage your questions. We sure hope you'll come. It's at willag.org. That's the details anyway, and a way to register, or 217-333-7300. It's just $25 and includes the meal at the Beef House too. So register today, 217-333-7300, or at willag.org. Now let's check the weather forecast for this Tuesday with Don DeHeese. Day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I hope you have sunshine and 60 degrees there today, like we will here. Maybe not, though. What's the weather forecast there, and what do you see for the next week?
Well, I tell you, we have a westerly flow across the lower 48 right now, which is doing two things. It's pumping in a milder Pacific air mass across most of the lower 48 states. So here we are, the beginnings of March, and a little taste of some spring-like weather coming our way. It's also producing a lot of rain. They've had some flooding in Washington State and Oregon due to a strong onshore flow, and they'll continue to get some moisture. But at least through, well, the work week here, we expect that the weather is going to mainly be confined to that Pacific Northwest, and mild spring-like conditions will be found in many other areas. However, over the weekend and into early next week, we're going to see the jet stream buckle, and that nice west-to-east flow will not be there, and we'll start to see some colder air come out of Canada, and sort of a reinvigorated winter-like weather pattern will be developing across a lot of the western and central United States next week.
I have some questions about that. You mentioned that it should buckle. I suppose that means there will be a northwest wind with cold air. Will it dip far enough south that it might make the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Kansas, Colorado, Oklahoma troublesome, given the dry conditions there and the warm conditions they have been having so far?
Yes, that is a concern. Now, is it going to be as intense as what they just experienced last week with that ARC outbreak? Does not look like it. But those areas will experience some of that colder weather. You know, there's still going to be a deviation from averages of as much as 20, 25 degrees. So you're talking about overnight lows dropping on down into the teens and lower 20s in those areas. And unfortunately, while the weather's going to get a lot more busy in the northern plains, parts of the central and northern Rockies and the west coast, that area of eastern Colorado, western Kansas, the panhandles, still appears to be, at least through this upcoming weekend, missing out on the better chances of rain and snow.
Now, next week in the United States would be a little early for those in the Midwest to start scratching around in the earth, but farmers get itchy about this time of year. Here in Illinois, Indiana, parts of Iowa, what do you see?
Well, for this mild weather, we'll get folks wanting to kick the dirt around for sure, but I do see that later in this weekend and into next week, some of this western weather is going to move into the Corn Belt, and especially the northwest and western areas of the Corn Belt. This will lead to rain chances increasing. There could even be some snow into the mix. And some of that colder weather is going to settle on in as well, especially by the middle of next week. So folks are getting antsy, and rightly so, but we're not quite there yet.
Hey, thank you, Don.
Thanks, Todd.
Don DeHeese with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.